This is the TTY Dialer, show number 14 for the week of January 23rd through January 28th. Hello, this is Mark Lavonier, and this is your weekly companion to WRVO's old-time radio show tuned to yesterday. Every night of the week, we broadcast comedy, drama, crime, mystery, adventure, and much more from radio's golden age, live on the air and also online at WRVO.org. This podcast is best listened to on Sundays or Mondays to get you ready for the week of old-time radio on the air with radio history, fun with sound from the past, and a look at the shows coming up for the week. But first, a moment from a program that we're not allowed to play over the air.
When other smokes have lost their zest, Cools keep right on tasting best. Switch from hots to
Cool cigarettes. When your mouth feels hot and dry from smoking too many ordinary cigarettes, that's the time to light up a Cool. Cool specially blended finer tobaccos bring back long-lost smoking pleasure. And no matter how many Cools you smoke, you'll always enjoy their cool, refreshing flavor. Switch from hots to Cool cigarettes for that clean, cool taste in your mouth.
Just smoke a Cool and you will see how refreshing Cools can be. Switch from hots to
Cool cigarettes for that clean, cool taste in your mouth. As Willie the Penguin says, smoke
Cool.
Smoke
Cool.
Smoke
Cool.
As of January 2nd, 1971, radio stations aren't allowed to play cigarette ads.
Dave Rose and the Cool Cigarette Orchestra play What's Good About Goodbye.
That moment was from the Red Skelton Show, which was heavily branded as the Raleigh and Cool Cigarette Program and held that sponsor for several years while Skelton was on NBC Radio. The commercial breaks were numerous in the show, and it made sense in a way, as Skelton held a spot in the top five comedy shows on the air with over 20 million listeners faithfully tuning in, even returning to his popular program after it was off the air when he was drafted during the Second World War for about a year. So any sponsor wanting that exposure would jump at the chance at the presumably large investment. This commercial was aired at a time when there was little to no restrictions on tobacco advertising, and it was treated like any other company that was selling a food or cleaning product with no censorship. And, you know, thinking about this reminded me that Red Skelton, like many comedians, had something to say when it came to the censoring of jokes on the air. Typically, a network's censor would go through a radio program script and cross out any offending material with a blue pencil. And Skelton usually didn't have much of a problem with this, but he headed up the march against it when comedian Fred Allen was cut off of the air and put into radio silence for almost 30 seconds after he started to tell a joke about a fictional vice president at NBC. According to the network policy, the obvious rules were in place, like no swearing or being blatantly derogatory or blue, as the expression goes. But it was also against the rules to make jokes about the network itself or anyone affiliated with NBC. It was the show of April 13, 1947, that Fred Allen disregarded the censor's direction to not air the joke, and with the censor hovering over the engineer who had his hand on the microphone volume followed along in the script, he heard Allen launch into the joke and then cut him off. Now, for a little bit of background, a lot of comedy programs, in particular Fred Allen's, would run over time. A lot of the shows would just get caught off at the end with the NBC chimes, that sort of thing. So the joke started with Fred saying, "There's a little," and that's where the network cut him off, leaving the studio audience to hear this. "There's a little man in the company we work for. He's a vice president in charge of program ends. When our program runs over time, he marks down how much time is saved." And his co-star Portland Hoffa asks, "What does he do with it?" Allen says, "He adds it all up, 10 seconds here, 20 seconds there, and when the vice president has saved up enough seconds, minutes, and hours to make 2 weeks, he uses the 2 weeks of our time for his vacation." Now that seems pretty tame today, but at the time it was really making fun of people at the network, which was against the rules. Now, during that live broadcast, Fred had no idea he was silenced, and afterwards he was asked by a reporter for a statement, and Fred said, "It's like walking into a pool room and plunking down your 60 cents for an hour's play, and then you find the owner has hidden the cue on you." Once this story hit the entertainment papers, the public was slightly shocked at what had happened, but the censoring really caused the biggest outrage among fellow radio comedians that felt that NBC had just gone too far. In the following days, comedian Bob Hope made a comment on his show and was silenced during his short quip. And then Red Skelton took a stab at it about a week after it happened, and then he was cut off of the air. Here's what it sounded like.
"Well,
back to the funny stuff.
Let's change the subject, huh? Let's change the subject.
Better still, let's change writers. We may say something will hurt the dignity of NBC. You know, did you hear what they did to Fred Allen Sunday?
That was the silence heard across the country on radio, but the studio audience heard Red say, "You know what NBC means, don't you? Nothing but cuts, nothing but confusion, nobody certain." Then NBC turned the mics back on.
Well, sir, we have joined the parade of stars, I see.
Say, you got a nice sunburn on your face, Red.
Oh, I'm blushing because they just cut me off.
After this, there was a lot more reporting on the story in a wider variety of newspapers featuring reactions from radio comedians and those in the business. And it came out that there were 14 vice presidents at the network who didn't really serve any meaningful function. On April 24th, about a week after it all went down, NBC finally relented and, by way of apology, lifted the kidding the network ban and attempted to make Fred Allen, Bob Hope, and Red Skelton honorary vice presidents, which Fred Allen refused. In the days after the decision, many of radio's biggest comedians wrote in references to the scandal in their shows, like Dennis Day.
Dennis, what are you doing?
Oh, listening to the radio.
To the radio? Oh, I don't hear anything.
I know, Fred Allen's on.
Burns and Allen and their spokesperson, Bill Goodwin, closed their show with this.
Bill, if you're the golden voice of radio, what do you call George?
I better not say, Gracie. They cut Fred Allen off the air for much less.
Abbott and Costello even got in on it and opened their program with this joke.
Look at yourself.
Well, I'm sick and tired of looking at me. You look at me.
No, stop that. Your appearance is disgraceful. Wait a minute. Why are you wearing that faded shirt?
I've just been made a vice president of NBC.
Faded as in faded down. And, of course, on the Jack Benny Show of April 27th, 1947, two references were made as Fred Allen being Benny's fictional on-air rival. Part of both of their programs was making cracks against each other normally, but this show was kind of a moment of solidarity.
But you know, Mary, it's going to be fun getting back on the stage again. What are you laughing at?
Did you hear what Fred Allen said about you last week?
No. No, Mary. What did he say?
Well, he said...
He said that? Well...
Although Fred Allen had trouble with network censors throughout his career, it was all in the name of comedy. And he'll have the last word with this moment from a one-off show he hosted on the state of American humor in 1949.
If you've summed up, so shall I. We can take hope from the fact that regardless of what radio and television are doing to it, humor will never die. Yes, maybe if we can find a common bond in humor to stop the fussing and fighting and feuding in the world, we might actually laugh our way into peace. In the final analysis, laughter is the universal language of mankind, and a little nonsense now and then is relished by the wisest men.
This Monday night, January 23rd, at 10 o'clock on the air on Tune to Yesterday, it's an hour of adventure. Screen actress Marlena Dietrich stars in Time for Love. Then it's The Voyage of the Scarlet Queen from 1947. Then Romance at 11 from the Lux Radio Theater with an adaptation of Remember the Night. This Tuesday, January 24th at 10, it's comedy episodes of The Charlie McCarthy Show and Burns and Allen.
There's a guy in the office above me who thinks he's a dancer.
Oh, great, great, great. There he goes again. He's been doing that all day. He's driving me crazy.
Oh, now, George, don't be upset. Feel sorry for him. You can tell by listening that he's obviously some poor old feeble trooper trying to get back into vaudeville.
I guess so.
Remember when you danced in vaudeville, darling?
Sure. They used to call me Twinkle Toes Burns.
And at 11 o'clock this Tuesday night, it's Westerns with The Frontier Gentleman and Gunsmoke. Hear all these shows this Monday, January 23rd, and Tuesday, January 24th, on the air from 10 to midnight or with our live stream at WRVO.org. I'm sure you've heard the expression beat the band. Well, the musical quiz show of that name made its debut this Saturday, January 28th in 1940. And while the quiz programs of the day, like Kay Kaiser's College of Musical Knowledge and Take It or Leave It, had the average person on their panel, Beat the Band took a tip from radio's intellectual quiz show, Information Please, and tried to stump the experts. In this case, the panel was made up of musicians. The rules went like this. A listener would write in with a clue of the song they were thinking of, usually in riddle form, and if it was used on the air, they automatically received a $10 prize, which in 1940 was worth about $175 in today's money. If the musicians couldn't identify the song, or at least play a few bars of it, they would have to pay the kitty. Now, the kitty on the show was a turned-over bass drum set in front of a microphone, and when one of the musicians was stumped, they would toss in a half-dollar coin. The one panelist who had the most right answers at the end would win the kitty. And losing answers would also benefit the original contributor because their cash prize of $10 would double, and their sponsor, General Mills, would throw in a case of Kix cereal. The host, Gary Moore, was on the first run of this series, which became part of his story of co-hosting a show with comedian Jimmy Durante, and later a long and famed run on television. This was Moore's first full-time radio gig, as well as the singer-in-residence Perry Como. They actually worked together on some test runs of the program, which were aired in select markets before it went national. In its first year, Beat the Band was ranked 7th of 17 quiz shows on the air, where about 10.5 million people listened on Sunday evenings at 6:30 on NBC. Here's some sound from their first national broadcast from January 28, 1940.
Now, of course, the man who answers must give the correct title and play an identifying strain of the song.
Well, how's about a sample?
All right, now, boys, here's one. What tune is recognized as the most famous of the blues tunes, and who is the man responsible for it? Let's see the hand. Huh? Now, there's Red Engel's hand going up right here. All right, Red?
St. Louis Blues.
That's right, and who wrote it?
W.C. Handy.
That's correct, though. Now, can you play it?
Well.
All right, now there you are, Fort. That's easy, isn't it?
Yeah, but that question didn't beat the band, Gary.
Oh, I know. We were just kidding that time. Now here come the toughies.
Say, Gary, how about my kitty?
Oh, well, now, looky here. Here's Country Washburn. He's stepping out from behind that old bass fiddle. So, you want to run that kitty again, Country? Have you got the bass drum handy so as the boys can toss in a half dollar when they miss?
I sure have.
Well, the boom of the old bass drum, folks, will tell you when someone's question beats the band. Say, Country, how come you're so interested in running a kitty?
A little extra revenue.
Yeah, I know, but any man in the band might get that kitty. You're taking a chance.
Well, the man that gets the most right answers gets the kitty, don't he?
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm not taking a chance.
Well, we'll see, Country, what we shall see. And remember, if no one in the band answers correctly, everybody feeds the kitty. Now, Fort Pearson will keep count, and the man who answers the most questions correctly takes the kitty at the end of the program. Now, friends, this portion of the program is absolutely unrehearsed. The boys do not know the question. You ready, fellas? How about
shoot the query to us, Gary.
All right, Elmo. And here comes question number one. From Winnebago, Minnesota, comes a question that is so close to home, it'll probably beat the band. Mr. Darrell Sechrist wants to know, what song is suggested when Elmo Tanner whistles on our program? Let's see some hands if anybody knows it. What song is suggested? Well, Elmo Tanner himself put his hand up there. Maybe he knows what song suggested when he whistles on the program. What is it?
I think that would be Whistle While You Work.
That's fair enough, right? Oh, now, can you whistle it? That's got it, all right. Good enough. And looks like Mr. Darrell Sechrist fails to beat the band, but he does get $10 for having his question used and gives Elmo Tanner 10 points up there on the big scoreboard. And here comes question number two. It's one which is answered by one of the favorite harmony tunes of convivial gatherings. Ben Siegel of Orange, New Jersey, wants to know what a nearsighted baseball player might say as he rounded third base. A lot of nearsighted looks coming up here. So, oh, look, here's Red Engel over here with his hand up. All right, Red, what a nearsighted baseball player would say when he rounded third, huh?
Home sweet home.
Oh, no, don't. No, that's awfully good. That's awfully good, but I'm afraid it didn't get it. The answer is show me the way to go home. He's nearsighted, is he?
It's got a curve in it.
Huh? No, I haven't got a curve. Don't groan at me. You got to groan at Mr. Ben Siegel of Orange, New Jersey, who beats the band, gets double money plus a case of Kix, $20. And look, hey, Red, see the kitty, will you? All right. There's your 50 cents on the drum. Now, here we go. Question number 3. If any of you boys sang in a choir at one time or another, you'll probably be able to answer this question rather quickly. Miss Betty Lee Forbes of Dayton, Ohio, sent it in, and she expects to beat the band. Well, here it is. If you sat in a dark corner and turned on a light, what would you do? The answer is an old hymn. If you sat in a dark corner and turned on a light, what would you do? There's Pete Beelman back in the trombone section. His hands going up sky high. It looks like a Statue of Liberty. As soon as I walk around here, we'll be all right.
Well, I'm not sure of this, but I think it's bright in the corner where you are.
Pete, Bob, you're absolutely astounding. You've got it. You've got it. Now, wait a minute. Don't applaud. He's got to play it yet, but just wait. I don't think he can do it.
That's it. I don't think I can either.
On your trombone.
Oh, I couldn't sing it, huh?
Couldn't sing it. No, sir, you're a trombone player. Artist, you give up?
This infringement's got me worried. You know that, don't you?
That's all right.
I'm sorry, Gary.
Oh, you had the first 3 notes. That was right. Now try a little harder. Come on.
In the corner, wait.
The show only lasted about a year on the air, but was revived as a summer replacement series for the vacationing Red Skelton on NBC, and with a new host, the singer known as the incomparable Hildegard. Coming up this Wednesday night at 10 o'clock on January 25th on Tune to Yesterday, it's drama from the Screen Guild Theater with a story called Command Decision, featuring some Hollywood luminaries in this war story, including Van Johnson, Edward Arnold, and Clark Gable. After that, it's an Armed Forces Radio Service broadcast of a play called Night Flight. And in the 11 o'clock hour Wednesday night, it's crime from episodes of Dragnet and yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Mrs. Wesley, your marriage with Art is none of my business, but that insurance policy his paper took out on him is. And incidentally, you're still the beneficiary.
So?
So he could be in danger, those articles he's writing.
Why doesn't he drop it?
Oh, look, you know Art better than that.
Then what am I supposed to do about it? That story is his business. How I feel about things is my business. And come to think of it, I can't see that either of those things is your business.
This Thursday night on Tune to Yesterday, January 26th, the mystery for an hour from Night Beat and the Adventures of Sam Spade. Then science fiction with shows 2000 Plus and Exploring Tomorrow, The Tale of the Martian Queen. You can hear all of these broadcasts this Wednesday, January 25th, and Thursday, January 26th, from 10 to midnight on Tune to Yesterday.
In a moment, we'll present the third act of Key Largo. I believe our guest tonight, Miss Debbie Reynolds, has established a record.
That record revealed in just a moment, but an institution of Hollywood, Debbie Reynolds, singer, actress, and lover of all things Hollywood, passed away on December 28th of last year. And this is tape from her very first radio appearance as the intermission guest on the Lux Radio Theater back in 1949.
You must be the youngest starlet on the Warner Brothers lot, Debbie.
Well, I'm 17, Mr. Keeley, and I was lucky enough to be signed even before I graduated from high school.
Wonderful. Had time to catch your breath yet?
Not quite, Mr. Keeley. There's so much to learn. I never miss a studio showing of a new picture. One that especially impressed me was The Hasty Heart.
Ah, yes, a most unusual story starring Ronald Reagan and Patricia Neal.
That's right, Mr. Keeley. And in addition, there's Richard Todd, the new British actor. I'm perfectly sure he's going to make a hit over here.
And moviegoers will applaud Patricia Neal as an army nurse. You know, she plays her role with great charm and conviction.
Isn't she lovely? Ronald Reagan is the American soldier who falls in love with her.
Well, now, Debbie, who could blame him? She's mighty easy on the eyes.
Oh, yes, a gorgeous blonde. And in her nurse's uniform, she's simply dreamy. What a complexion. She's a Lux girl, Mr. Kennedy. Never neglects her daily Lux soap facials.
Like most screen stars, she knows it's a care she can depend on. A gentle, protecting care that's right for delicate skin.
Well, it certainly works for me. It's a real beauty soap. And I'd like to recommend Lux Soap Care to any girl who wants a nicer complexion.
Thank you, Miss Debbie Reynolds, for that very sound beauty hint.
And Debbie's last appearance on radio would take place as a Look magazine commercial spokeswoman on the Western Have Gun Will Travel in September of 1959, 10 years after that broadcast. Coming up this Friday night on Tune to Yesterday, we have sitcoms for an hour, funny episodes of Duffy's Tavern and The Life of Riley, then horror from Escape and the Lights Out series. And the Saturday, January 28th, it's romance from Orson Welles and the Campbell Playhouse from 1939. Then an hour of comedy from The Fred Allen Show.
You know, the new pot of gold program is giving away money if you've got a home and they can catch you in it. All of the quiz shows are paying people to send in questions. The Milton Berle program is buying old jokes.
Yeah, right? Well, that's the trouble, Fred. People can't make any money listening to our show.
People are actually losing money, Harry.
They're losing?
Losing, actually losing. Now, look, a man sits home by his radio. He listens to us for an hour. And what has he got?
A headache.
Exactly.
You can hear these broadcasts on the air live and online at our website this Friday, January 27th, and Saturday, January 28th, from 10 to midnight on Tune to Yesterday. And you probably already know that we have previous night's broadcasts posted on our website. Just click on Tune to Yesterday when you're there and listen to them at your convenience. But that is what's coming up for the week, and that is it for this week in radio history. If you have any questions or comments about Tune to Yesterday, the TTY Dialer podcast, or anything old-time radio, just email me, mark@wrvo.org.
And we're particularly grateful to those of you who've taken the time to send us your cards and letters. After all, they are the only sure way of telling that you liked our show.
It is nice to hear from you. Okay, until next week then, for the podcast anyway, thanks a lot for listening.